Welcome back. Today what I want to do is I want to take some time to look at the question of the approaches to NVC that was in the materials that I sent as follow-up. Let me start telling you what is this piece that I call approaches to NVC. This emerged a few years ago when I was noticing that there are people who teach NVC, and their focus is very different from what I focus, from the way that I and Inbal, my sister, we basically created our approach together. And I was trying to reflect on that, and that's when this idea hit me that different people have different ways of focusing in terms of NVC. So I want to give you an example or two, and maybe other people can jump in and share theirs. So, for example, one of my primary paths with NVC is the path of vulnerability and authenticity. And you can see, if you've been around NVC for a while, you can see that that's consistent with NVC. There is clearly something about vulnerability and authenticity that, as you delve more and more into NVC, becomes more available to you. Not everyone has that as a primary path. Someone else, as a primary path, may have the question in every moment, what can be done right now to hold everyone's needs with care? Someone else, their primary path can be, how can I have the most choice in this moment? So I want to see if these examples are sufficient to clarify what I mean by an approach to NVC, and if anybody wants more clarification.
Just in what you were talking about, I'm wondering, the way you presented it, it almost sounded as if we could either be focused on authenticity and vulnerability, or self-connection, self-acceptance, or...
Yeah, thank you. That is much sharper and more extreme than I would mean it. What I mean is, what is the quality that we prioritize in terms of our development? How do we approach each moment as our most familiar way of applying our NVC consciousness? All of them are consistent, and they're not at odds with each other. It's just different paths. And what happens is that people with different paths, unless there is clarity and consciousness about what it is that we each are doing, might appear to each other like doing something strange. Sometimes. I have had this experience of people who are teaching NVC or practicing NVC, and what they're doing wasn't completely making sense to me until I had this picture, and it's like, ah, so they are prioritizing this, which to me is not such a high priority, and that's why this disconnect appears. Does this help?
It does. Thank you.
So I'd like to put you in groups of three. And I'd like you to talk with each other about where you see yourself. What does that mean? Where are times when it comes up for you that it creates a tension or not? Is it useful for you to look at other approaches and expand your horizon? Is it overwhelming? Anything that is uncomfortable for you? Like, really explore. How do you approach NVC? Become conscious of the way that you are already doing it. Welcome back. I'm hoping you had some satisfying conversation, and I would like to hear from a few people who might have had either an aha or insight or question or comment, something that came up for you that you would like to shed more light on or to have us all discuss?
I didn't have a sheet in front of me when I started the conversation, so I just asked myself what came up for me. The thing that came up for me at that moment was understanding, a way to have a deeper understanding of my own behavior and others' behavior. Now I have the sheet in front of me, and I'm looking, and I see, oh, there's understanding, but it's part of a slightly different thing. So I just found that interesting. That this isn't a complete list that you can go on and find other ways.
Absolutely. That's why one of the questions was, do you have a different approach that you would like to be added to the table? If you can fill in the blanks of all the columns and send it to me, I would be thrilled. Because one or two of these came to us from others. You know, we came up with a few and then others brought us more. So it's kind of like a work in progress that keeps building. Thank you. Anyone else, anything else you want to bring in? What was meaningful for you or not in having this conversation?
It firstly made me think of what my own approach was, which a lot of it's around non-attachment, around not being attached to how people react to what I say and not judging them. I realized that in the past I had pretty much scripted what other people should say, and if they said anything different, I didn't like it. and then the other people in the group just confirmed the usefulness of this approach by describing their own approaches, which in at least one case did fit into a couple of these buckets.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very valuable exercise.
Thank you. So again, you and anyone else, if you have something that you want to add, I would really very much appreciate receiving, you know, notes about it so I can expand and expand.
You know, I was kind of going through, and I, you know, what I really came to was that I'm really excited about lately is presence. And I'm really finding that that's like, not necessarily synonymous, but it's like it's almost presence and compassion for me are like one and the same. I've just really been enjoying noticing the subtleties of when I'm present and when I'm not, and what that's like with the quality of my experience. It just seems like that's like the whole ball of wax, kind of being in that place where you're not resisting or wanting something, but just really being there. So I'm really, really been excited about that.
Thank you. One of the things when I think about, well, so what's the meaning of this? What does it do? How does it affect our life? I'm thinking one of the things that it can affect is how we will actually respond to a moment. Because essentially, in terms of the actual behavior, if we're going to be using MVC, we have, you know, empathy, expression, and self-connection internally, being with oneself. So I am thinking if your focus is on presence, you're more likely to respond to a moment by being with yourself than someone whose practice is, let's say, a way of how to hold everyone's needs dear. That person is more likely to be focused on finding, you know, when being in dialogue, find strategies to meet everyone's needs. That's a different behavior that is going to ensue from what you hold inside. And even being with yourself, you will be with yourself differently if your focus is about being present, or if your focus is about self-empathy, or if your focus is about holding compassion for everyone. They just result in different actions. They're all fundamentally the same consciousness. They lead us in slightly different directions, and I found it really empowering that both in terms of understanding myself and other people in general, and also that, like everything else, this is not a system of classification. This is not the NVC Myers-Briggs test. It's not a personality trait. I can choose an approach for today. Or I can, in the moment when something happens, I can ask myself, what do I want to prioritize in responding to this? And that affects my choices right away. It's almost like a different angle than asking, what are my needs? Even choosing the asking, what are my needs, is already a response. I'm really appreciating that further clarity about how this tool can help us.
Yeah, I really see how that would play out. And also, I can imagine myself wanting presence for another person and how that might play out as well.
Thank you,
Mickey.
Uh-huh.
I found this group exercise really interesting. One thing that I noticed was that in my use of NVC, there's been a shift in my approach. In the first few years, I think the need was compassion. It was about empathy, listening, reflection. And now it's much more, my approach is much more about authenticity and vulnerability. I hadn't recognized that until we started talking about it. So I found it interesting.
Yes. That's another way in which it isn't static, that it's not just that I can choose in the moment or for today or for this week. It shifts over time. It's almost like it's at different levels of integration. As you integrate one aspect, then you open up to another aspect and work with that for a while and then integrate that. And each time it changes your approach. And for me, because I so treasure consciousness, having consciousness that that's what I'm doing helps me make more sense of my choices. Thank you. I'm wondering if anyone else has any comments or questions about this frame of having different approaches to NVC that you'd like to bring forth before shifting to a different topic.
One thing for me I really want to keep track of is the arrogant edge I have that, you know, anything that kind of settles about what this is or any, I feel like it's my mind in the training my mind has, that once I've decided what it is, I can put it aside or file it.
Uh-huh.
Whereas this really supports me to keep it alive. And I really enjoyed the conversation with the three other people because they were very, quite different, but really beautifully expressed different approaches of what's the shining beacon for NVC at the moment. And I really enjoy anything that undoes, made me realize, I really have some rules here. I have quite a few. This is what it is. You know, this is how it should be. And
This is a very tender and wonderful moment to be able to recognize the way that we try to fix things and make them static. Because, you know, that's what human beings have done many times over. Try to say, okay, that's it. Now we've reached the truth and now we no longer need to look and no longer need to be in the discomfort of not knowing. There is something both generative and scary about not knowing. So we try to imagine that we do know something when we really don't know anything on some level. I mean, I don't even know that we don't know, you know. So there's something about recognizing that in yourself and being able to hold it with tenderness that I find very invigorating, so I'm really touched and delighted that you are willing to share this moment with all of us. Sad that you had to struggle with shyness about it.
I think it's part of the tenderness of the moment as well. I feel quite vulnerable touching this every time I do.
Yeah.
It's like a beautiful field opening up, and I've lost my wings, or I really don't know. I don't know, and it's a really scary thing.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Given that you're feeling vulnerable, is there anything you want by way of feedback? For example, would it be meaningful to you to see how many people resonate with this experience?
Yeah, as the tears roll down my face, yes. So it does help me connect to either, you know how many people are on the call or to hear back how it was for people to receive that.
Great. Feel free to vote if it's true for you. I'm asking everyone who resonates or feels connected to the experience that Kate just expressed to press 4 so you can get the feedback of how you landed. So the numbers are continuing to rise. It's almost everyone. It's since you are one, so it's 14 of 17 people. I bet that feels really sweet, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It really does. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, everyone, for voting. Are you complete?
Yeah, I'm very complete. Thank you, Mickey. I'm quite settled.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
I have so much to say about my relationship with NVC, but I live in Canada and there's a lot of snow here and there's a lot of ice as well on the roads. And one day I was with a friend of mine and we slid majorly. I swear I thought I was going to die. And she held my hand and I held her hand. And we just said, I love you. And we sort of surrendered. And that feeling is the feeling I have when I practice NVC, when I'm in NVC consciousness. It's about complete surrender of my head, of my wishes, of whatever. And it's absolutely, it can be very, very painful and could at first, but it's a wonderful, empowering feeling. And I can only, you know, my only understanding of it is like divine energy or something. Mm-hmm. So does anybody connect with what I'm saying?
Let's ask people to press 4 if they do. So with you, it's 11 people, so also quite a number.
Wow, that's really
swell.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Okay, so the next topic that I want to look at is we touched last week on the way that when we practice NVC, when we enter the experience of NVC and practice it over time, then something in our consciousness changes. And what does that mean, that the consciousness changes? So again, one day in Balin, I tried to sit down to really translate that very visceral and clear sense into words. And we divided it into two groups of changes, two types of changes. One is, in a very real sense, how we understand people, the world, and life changes. To give you an example, to say, which we say in NVC, that every action is an attempt to meet needs, that's a different way of understanding life. It's a different way of understanding people. It's a different way of understanding human action. It's a different way of understanding many things. It's a change that we didn't have before we encountered NVC, at least not most of us. So in that sense, the practice of NVC relies and strengthens certain ways of understanding what it means to be human. So we created, again, a document that lists all of these assumptions that we make about what it means to be human. Now, we call them assumptions because we don't think of them as truths, because they're not provable. You cannot prove, for example, that every human action is an attempt to meet needs. It's not something that you can prove or disprove, because it is a way that you make sense of reality. You can't prove or disprove that anything about people in that way, because even, at least for me, in my belief system, even the experiments that try to prove things are all embedded within human cultures, and we don't know what we are outside the human culture because we don't exist outside human cultures. So these are very deep questions for me, and I want to pause and see if there are any questions or comments about this idea that practicing NVC changes the assumptions and lens that we have in terms of how we understand the world. Any questions or comments about this?
I'm agreeing with what you're saying, and going into interactions with people with the idea that there isn't a good and or bad outcome to the interaction is a huge change. It's been very positive for me, and then I'm somewhat struggling with the question as to whether that's a tactic or as to whether it's the truth, if you see what I mean.
Yes.
But I can say that as a tactic, it's extremely effective and has really already helped me connect better with people.
Great. What you are bringing forth is more in the second set that Inbal and I identified, which is the set of intentions that we bring to our living. One of our intentions is indeed to move beyond good and bad, beyond right and wrong. That is an intention. It's not like we know there is or isn't right or wrong. It's just we intend to transcend it. And that has effects on our actions and on the responses that we get. So it's two groups. One is what we think about what's going on, what we believe to be true. And the other is, how do we intend our actions to be? And my sense is that the one that you shared is more in the intention category, and I'm wondering if you see it differently.
No, it's a new thought to me and much appreciated, and I will give it some thought.
Thank you.
I'm contemplating what you just said about intentions. What I wanted to share, I think for me, it's a shift to a space of curiosity and openness to possibilities. But more than that, I think it's a shift into the space of love, with a capital
mm-hmm.
L, which is really what it's about. And when we relate from that space of love, then all things are possible. And there isn't, as you said, a good or bad or mm-hmm. right or wrong. But I find that extremely powerful to enter that space.
Yeah. And one of the things that I like about NVC is that it makes those kinds of things very concrete. Because what it means for me to enter the space of love is when I kind of like, it's almost like I have had this image of like, you know, one of those like high beam lights that I can't remember the name, floodlight or something like this. It's kind of like you turn it on, and then you can point it in different directions. And if you take that light and shine it outward, then it would be the focus of empathic presence, meeting other people with empathy. And if you take that light and shine it on yourself, it's the focus of self-acceptance, self-compassion, openness, vulnerability. All those can emerge from the love. Does that resonate for you?
Yeah, and it reminds me of, I don't know where I heard this story, but Albert Einstein once was asked about the concept of good and evil, and he just said that evil is simply the lack of the presence of love. That's all it is. But yes, I think all those qualities are aspects of love. And it goes back to your whole thing about how spiritual NVC is, because these
yes.
are all divine qualities.
So the use of the word divine is meaningful for some people and not for others. So one of the goals that I've had is to be able to couch things in a language that would reach people whether or not spiritual concepts are resonant for them. And that's why I want to find very concrete ways of identifying what the intentions are.
Mm.
What exactly do I do? What do I intend to do? Not how I intend to be. Do you see what I mean?
I see what you mean, and for me, I think it's a shift into a place of what do I intend to be, and that's where I differ from you.
Right, and that being, for me, the one of the key values of NVC is that it takes that being, that quality of being, and gives concrete practices that nourish it.
I think I understand. So you're just saying it puts it into a form that we can relate to.
Yes. So that it's like, okay, so I want to be love. What do I do to strengthen that in myself?
I see. That makes sense.
That is why NVC so often is resonant for people who have years of spiritual practice, and then they say, ah, this allows me to make my spiritual practice practical. It allows me to actually put the values into practice because I have a concrete form of concrete actions to take.
Are you saying that love is an action rather than a state?
I'm not saying that it is or isn't. I'm saying that certain actions increase my capacity to be love. For example, if I practice empathy, if I tell myself whatever somebody says, I want to respond to that with empathy. That act increases my love. Can you see that?
I do.
more so in my mind than just telling myself every morning, I want to be loved today. Because I'm actually doing something that strengthens my muscles. And I'm curious if that resonates for you or not.
Absolutely, it does.
Great. So what I would like to do now is put you back in your groups, and I would like to ask you to see if you can tease out some of the assumptions and intentions that you have in you in relation to NVC. In other words, your practice of NVC rests on what kind of assumptions? What do you tell yourself about yourself and other people that allows you to trust that it's okay to practice NVC? In other words, to take it to a kind of like an extreme, if you believed the very intense Hobbesian perspective on life, that it's a dog-eat-dog world, you wouldn't likely want to practice NVC. So there's certain things you have to believe about people, about yourself, in order to choose to continue the NVC practice. So I want you to take some time to talk about those. And also, I want you to take some time to talk about, and therefore, now that you have those that perspective on the world, what are the intentions that you bring to your practice? What does your practice actually consist of? And I'm not talking observations, feelings, needs, requests. That is the very concrete form. I'm talking about the principles that guide your actions. So I'd like to know if anybody has any more questions or needs any more clarity to know what to do in your group.
This is not for now, maybe later, or maybe at some point during the class. I'm thinking about my assumptions, and you spoke of hubs, and I'm thinking there's people around me who are really, we would say Cartesian in French, or Hobbesian if you want. And I'm thinking, how can I relate to these people and, you know, be clear? Or, I mean, I can accept them, but how can we connect? I'm not talking about a superficial way.
Yes. I mean, is it possible to have real intimacy,
yes,
across very different assumptions about human nature or,
yes,
what life is about? I'd love to leave that question open and to come back to it. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I get writing the intentions or the assumptions about what is it that you believe about people in order to continue practicing NVC. It's the next piece, I'm not sure. Therefore, you said, therefore, what does your practice consist of? The principles,
yeah,
that give...
Yeah, in other words, to take an example, if I believe that all human actions are an attempt to meet needs, then based on that, I can have as one of my intentions to always look for the needs underneath everyone's actions. I can have intentions that are not grounded in the assumptions. So either way is fine. Was that helpful enough?
The example was more helpful than what you said next.
Great. So let's take a little bit more time because there's more territory to cover. Okay. Talk to you again in a little bit. Welcome back. I'm very, very eager to hear from you and engage with you in conversation about what you found and what questions you have. What was meaningful for you? What did you discover? What did you hear from others that was striking?
One of the assumptions that I kind of want more clarity on is the stimulus and cause assumption. And this is because I've gone kind of round and round with some people discussing this and about what that means. And I want to just kind of throw out my latest understanding, kind of get your feedback on it. I think it revolves around, like, in one sense, of course we have an effect on other people because we're interdependent. Just the fact of somebody sitting next to me affects me. In that case, I mean, we all affect each other, but the cause part of it is that I'm responsible for the quality of my connection to what gets triggered in me, what gets stimulated in me. And that seems to be the cause. And I'm just wondering about that whole assumption and your take on it.
Thank you. I have thought about this a lot over the years, so I'm appreciating the opportunity to talk about it. And I've thought about it from a similar angle to yours, where there is a seeming paradox here that, you know, your actions don't cause my reaction, and yet my reaction is not independent of your action. It doesn't arise randomly out of thin air. So what is the relationship? What is the actual relationship between your actions and my reaction? Where I have come to is that, yes, the cause of my reaction is the meaning that I assign to your action. And that's me. That is inside of me. I see you do something. I tell myself a story about it. And again, to kind of like push the point, I want to say that telling myself that your action is an expression of your needs is also a story that I tell myself. It's a different story that leads to different reactions. It still is a story. I imagine that's clear to you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm enjoying that clarity.
So, as best I can understand it, the relationship is almost like a probability distribution that is in part given by the culture that we live in. For example, I'll give some really simple examples. Let's say you're speaking, and I speak before you were done. In the North American culture that you and I both live in, although I wasn't raised in it, and that's significant for what I'm about to say, that is likely to be interpreted by you through the lens of disrespect. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, in that sense, if I know the norms of the culture, while I don't cause your experience of disrespect, I want to be conscious and mindful of the fact that if I speak while you're speaking, there's a high likelihood that this will be your experience, even though I'm not causing it. That mindfulness for me is part of interdependence. It's part of the conscious practice of interdependence, which is different from the fact of interdependence that just exists. Did I lose you, or does this still make
sense? No, I believe so. It's very much so. There's a real awareness, there's a consciousness of, given what I know about a certain person, whether it be culture, just their temperament, and if, you know, if connection is my intention, then I want to know, you know, I just want to, I kind of act with a sense of what their threshold of trigger is and how they take things. Just
yes.
Knowing that
yes.
Is my responsibility to that person, given my intention.
I would think of it more as your responsibility to your own humanity. That's how I like to think about it most. And then this also helps explain, you know, how sometimes people react to things and everybody looks at them, it's like, why are you reacting this way? Chill. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's because they are outside the regular probability distribution in the whatever the cultural milieu is. So that's part of why it's not a cause, because it doesn't determine it. You may have had different experiences in your life. You may be traumatized in particular ways that put a filter on your experience and lead you to interpret it in different ways from other people. You may have grown up in a different culture, and that's why you have a different lens. There can be any number of reasons why you have a different lens. It may be just today because you have a toothache. So there is a complete fluidity while there is also things that we can know about it. That's as far as I've gotten with it. And I don't have a sense that there's any language that can take that complex relationship and give it one word, stimulus, cause. It's a complex relationship that we don't. And I like a term that Dominic Barter has created in a different context that suddenly is fitting for me. He talks about co-responsibility for things. And there is something about that that honors the interdependence. Because when somebody says, well, I'm just a stimulus, I'm not a cause of your reaction, people often say it in a way that says, I'm not related to it, go away. For me, there is so much meaning that can happen from teasing out what was going on for you when you did this. I reacted to it in this way. What was really going on for you? That quality of connection is profound when I can map my reaction to your inner state. It's the closest to having no barriers with another person that I've ever experienced, is those kinds of interactions. So thank you for bringing that question up. I probably went into it much more than you thought I would.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I just want to respond to what David said. We're in the same group. I think I was the one to mention that how striking it was to me when I read that what others say and do may be the stimulus, but never be the cause of our feelings. Mm-hmm. I like that sentence so much that I typed it out and put it in my office and make it so big I can see it every day. What happened to me is because I always blame on other people before I learn NVC. You know, other people is my husband, my co-worker, everybody. After reading that, it's really so striking that I look at every single event that happened that made me not happy. And going back to look at my feelings and how that has been caused by their action. And how is it that I should take responsibility of my own need or my own feelings? One example is that my tenants, they play music and have big party until 3 o'clock in the morning. So the neighbor is a very close neighbor, very close and quiet. So me and my husband was very mad about it. So I left messages the next day, and I tried to talk to them. And I recognized that they, as young people, they have their need of joyful party sometimes. And I just told him that our need in this neighborhood is also that we also want to sleep at night and to be peaceful at night. I wasn't mad, just wanted to tell him the truth, and he received it quite peacefully. I don't know if that is an example of what we are trying to say.
Yes, it is, because you were taking responsibility, you weren't blaming him. So this is an example of how what we do inside changes how we actually act towards other people. By holding on to this awareness that your feelings are your responsibility and are related to your needs and not caused by his actions, your heart approached him in a different way that likely made it easier for him to hear. Thank you.
Follow up on the discussion you had earlier about moving beyond right and wrong, and you described it as an intention, which I can certainly see. But I also think that it can be, I know it can be an assumption in your worldview, that right and wrong are some kind of confusion or an illusion. You can make the assumption that the truth is that there really isn't a should. That's where I'm at intellectually, although I would say it's still soaking in.
Yeah, I would say that in terms of, the assumption that you can connect with it is that right and wrong are human constructs. That's the way that I would hold it, that these are human constructs. They don't exist as truths out there.
Right. Yeah, as absolutes. The practice I try to have is when I hear shoulds or right and wrong is translated into, so that's what somebody wants, somebody values.
Yes, one of the things that, and here you just named another intention that we can have when we practice NVC, which is to translate every judgment that we hear into the underlying needs that the other person may have. You're doing that, and you didn't think of it as an intention, but it is. And part of what's powerful about this is that when we do that, when we translate other people's judgments, it changes our experience. Most of the things that we do with NVC end up affecting our experience in a particular direction. This is an example. Thank you. Anything else you want to add about this?
I'm just hearing your comment about how it affects our experience. The thought I have about this particular thing, and then I think it applies to so many of the practices or intentions with or assumptions with NVC is that they make it easier to see someone else as it humanizes, it opens our heart to them.
Yes.
That's a change in my experience.
Yes. It opens your heart to them and that changes your experience. I would say it does so in part because it's like your world gets populated with a different kind of person. It's really striking. My kind of like dramatic example of this is I say, you know, I used to have a manipulative mother. I no longer have a manipulative mother. She hasn't changed her behavior because my perception is different. When my perception is different, when the lens that I put on things is different, then my feelings are going to be different. Anything else, or is this enough to chew on for now?
I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you. And next.
One of the assumptions that came up in our group was only I can meet my own needs. And I was expressing some difficulty after all these years with MVC, still with that. Someone in our group mentioned how really it's recognizing our needs that's the help in that. You know, only I can meet my own needs. Well, at least I can recognize what my needs are. I guess I'm wondering.
Are you planning to go to something else? Because I have quite a bit in response to what you've said so far.
I welcome it for sure, because this is an area where I'm sure there's a lot more that I just don't get.
So I take issue with the idea that only I can meet my needs. I take issue with it because, or maybe it's meant in a way that I don't understand, so maybe whoever said it might want to join this conversation.
That's me.
That's you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then
I'm responsible for meeting my own needs.
There's a difference between it's my responsibility to take the necessary actions to meet my needs. The necessary actions, more often than not, involve other people.
Right. And so, it says something different when we say only I. So I'm responsible for meeting my own needs.
By taking the actions necessary to meet them, which may involve other people's actions. As the most trivial example, how can you meet only by yourself your need for nutrition?
Right. Or support.
Yeah.
And so if we are trying to assist someone to meet their own needs who is grieving because of the loss of someone in their life, how do we do that?
But see, you're back to they don't meet their needs. They are responsible for putting in place the strategies to meet their needs. That's very different. We are interdependent social creatures. Put any one of us alone and we do not have the capacity to stay alive for very long. So hearing that you went back to that language, I am wondering if there is some way that the injunction to be self-sufficient is what's motivating you to say this.
I guess it's wondering what the choice is as one experiences loss.
So hang on one second, because I want to say that I recently have been in ongoing conversation with someone, and the result of that was a new distinction between self-sufficient and self-reliant. We're not self-sufficient. That's the nature of reality as I understand it. We can be self-reliant, rely on our own resources to make it happen that we meet our needs. Does that help, this distinction?
Yes.
And I know I haven't addressed the loss yet, just on a general level.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Then the other piece that I want to say, in terms of loss, what's the biggest need that someone has who has been through a loss?
Connection.
For me, the biggest need is mourning.
I see. Yeah, in this particular loss, it's not total loss, it's limbo. will she come back, won't she come back? So it's more, yeah, it's mourning still, though, because it's mourning what they thought they had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when somebody's had a loss and they're in mourning, probably their inner resources are very compromised. So their ability to ask for what they need is compromised, because that's, in any event, compromised in our culture, the ability to ask for what we need. So if that's someone that you are close to, you can offer the support to create something that would allow this person to do their mourning, if that's what they want to do. But you can make yourself available.
So mourning is a need. It's not a strategy.
I believe so. It's almost like the same as celebration. It's essentially to be connected with the flow of joy and pain that is in life.
And acceptance is a need connected with mourning, right?
I would really, the main thing I want to say, and I don't want to stay with this because it's a little bit on a tangent for me.
Sure.
I would say the most important thing is to not design somebody else's process for them. A company without agenda. You've done enough mourning, it's time for you to go into acceptance, then the person loses your support.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay?
Thank you so much.
Sure. What I would like to do is to bring you one more time into your groups for a different way of relating to everything that we did today. I want you to just kind of like take stock emotionally and otherwise of where you've been during today's class. How are you doing? What's alive in you? What came into place? What is easy to integrate? What leaves you uncomfortable? You know, just connect on a more heart level, because this is very much engaging intellectually with the material. And I want us to do that not for very long, so that we have time to attend to whatever is alive and open for you that would allow closure of where you are and of the material before we end today's session. Let's go back into the groups for 6 minutes. Welcome back. I just want to open the microphone to anyone who has any lingering question or comment. We have a few minutes before the end.
Yeah, I was just wondering, when you were giving the example of your mother and you perceive her differently now, even though her actions are still the same, does that mean you would hang out with her, you know, tolerate that kind of behavior that might be harmful or unhealthy?
I'm really appreciating the question. It kind of like went through a phase in which I was having the thought, this is manipulative, and translating it into feelings and needs. And now the thought just doesn't arise at all. It's not like I don't have any judgments of her. That particular one is gone. It's just gone. It's not like I look at the behavior and go, oh, this is unhealthy, but now I don't have to call it manipulative and I can kind of like tolerate it. It's not like that. Something really shifted.
Like my husband says, is constantly being very verbally abusive. How do you deal with that? I don't know if that parallels with your situation.
It does parallel. It does parallel. There is a way in which when you say that he's being verbally abusive, you are seeing him in a particular way, and you are less likely to be able to access your NVC frame to be able to respond to him differently. I mean, I wish that the question of such depth came up earlier, because I'm not confident that I can do it enough justice within the time that we have. I'm just still very much appreciating your courage and trust in bringing it forth. So I will say that whatever it is that he's doing that you are calling verbally abusive, if, and only if you truly could see his feelings and needs that lead him to act in this way, to speak in this way,
right,
you would have a wider range of options for how to respond to the same behavior, which is very hard to grasp when you are in the place where you are, where it is so hurtful for you to hear whatever it is that he does. So this is not something that just my saying this can change it. This requires work and empathy for where you are before you can open to see that possibility. I'm just wondering how you're doing even hearing what I'm saying. I'm very worried that it might strike you in a way that would not convey my care.
No, I understand what you're saying. I've attempted many times to do what you're saying, and it's just very hard to get to.
So what I would like to do is I'd like to see, you know, there are people on the call who have quite a bit of NVC experience. They're teaching NVC already, and I'm just wondering if by any chance there is anyone who is available to support Alicia with empathy and or a role play to see if that can be helpful, because we can't do it on the call. Is there anyone who feels moved and able to offer that? Okay, there are several people. I will give you the names, and you can contact them and set up a time to talk. And I have a sense that you can get a lot of relief and support that is surprising and stunning if
you
haven't had it.
Thank you, and thank you to the people.
Yeah. What I would like to do just to bring us to a complete close is I would like to just hear from two or three people, what's a one-liner of something you're taking home with you? What's going to stay with you, you think, from what we did today?
A one-liner is, NVC gives me concrete practices that nourish love.
Thank you.
Most of the things we do in NVC affect our experience of life.
Thank you. That is nourishing enough for me. And I am really grateful to have your company in exploring theory. It's kind of like it's a passion of mine, and it's so nice to have people who want to explore it also. And there will be follow-up notes and prep notes for next week. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.